Among the voting demographics, it said that seniors are the most active, while the younger are least likely to show up at the polls. 2008 election of Barack Obama brought about cracks in that dam, as the youth vote certainly turned out in support of him. Campaigns since then have sought to capitalize on that, what's called the millennial voter group. Well, Bernie Sanders has touched a nerve with them via his promise of, well, basically a greater welfare state. GOP side has struggled a bit with gaining that vote. Here with her analysis of this is political columnist, founder of the blog The Libertarian Chick, and author of the upcoming book Government Gone Wild, How D.C. Politicians Are Taking You for a Ride and What You Can Do About It, Kristen Tate. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
And Kristen's blog is found at thelibertarianchick.com. And we look at the GOP side, Kristen. It was supposed to be Marco Rubio. I mean, he was young. He was a new generation. The GOP has been struggling a bit in that rollover to the next generation of party names and leaders. And as we've come to see, Marco Rubio just did not catch on. So if the younger millennial voters are looking for a new name and a new face, what went wrong with that picture?
What makes a candidate successful with millennials is messaging and branding. And millennials like to embrace cool brands because who you support for president says a lot about you as a person. And being cool has nothing to do with age. Look at Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is elderly, and he is very popular among millennials. What this is about is messaging. It's about spreading the GOP message in a way that gets people excited on platforms that they already use. And unfortunately, the GOP has failed miserably at this in the last few elections, and so far they have with this one as well.
Some could argue with that. When you look at Donald Trump, he's certainly a master in mass media communications. You look at the population of his rallies, certainly sizable, and you see a good range of age, not predominantly millennials, but certainly younger than what we see at a Jeb Bush rally, for example. And Trump speaks in live in person, more bomb dropping. But then when you go to his website, you get these multi-page white papers on the issues. If you want to be get a little more study about positions, does he seem to maybe have the better balance of, okay, I'll bring them in and then teach them when they get here?
Donald Trump has definitely done better among millennials than the other candidates. He polls particularly well among millennial men, but he fails miserably with millennial women. And I think that if he wants to attract younger voters, he needs to start talking more about the economy and how the GOP ideas and how his ideas will bring prosperity and pathways of opportunity to young people. You have to remember, my generation is the most diverse generation ethnically in the country. So when he continually talks about building a wall, that plays very well with the GOP base and the older voters. But that kind of rhetoric is definitely going to turn off a lot of young people. So he needs to make an effort to also talk about the economy in ways that are very easy to understand, that are snappy and will resonate with young people to bring over some more of these millennial voters, I think.
Well, certainly, and you give insight into the idea, too. When you look at the economics that the national economy is resting on, it's a bed of sand, basically. When you look at the debt plus unfunded mandates like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, Generation Kristen's 24 years old, by the way, as a reference point. People of your generation are looking at their financial future and thinking, I'm going to be facing, if I succeed, I'm going to be facing an old school going back to the 1930s and 40s, 90% tax rate, because that's what the government's going to have to do just to keep afloat. Never mind fill the ditch that the current and the previous generations have created.
Exactly. And not only that, but currently, as we speak, we have historic numbers of millennials sitting at home with their parents, living with their parents, and they can't find jobs. The employment rate among millennials is very misleading. It's much higher than current polls show because they count people who, work in restaurants and as servers as being employed. But a lot of these millennials have college degrees, and yet they're still working minimum wage jobs. So we really are interested as a generation in opportunity and the economy, and we are interested in these issues, and we need a presidential candidate to explain, again, in a very snappy way on platforms that we already go to, how they can bring us that prosperity.
So Kristen Tate, political columnist, founder of the blog The Libertarian Chick, which is at, of course, thelibertariancheck.com, author of the upcoming book Government Gone Wild, How D.C. Politicians Are Taking You for a Ride and What You Could Do About It. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Saw a poll, and not to get into the nuance of numbers, which verbally makes people's ears glaze over, but just as putting it into easy terms, the poll basically said that the millennial voter today is proactive when it comes to going out protesting social media, but not going to the polls. Is that where some of the blame comes upon the millennial voter then?
Well, look, if you want them to go to the polls, you need to mobilize them. Obama did a great job at mobilizing millennials in 2008 and again in 2012, so it's not impossible to do. I just think that many of these candidates are not making special efforts to mobilize us. My generation, to connect with us, you have to do it in a different way than you would connect with baby boomers. I mean, let's face it, my generation, we all have ADD. We all have very short attention spans because we grew up on the Internet. So if you want to get a message, an effective message across to young people, it needs to be done in very snappy, fun, inspiring ways. We need to be inspired, and we need to think that actual change is going to happen. That's how you're going to get us to the polls.
Well, doesn't it also come with partially or part of the whole picture? A voter has to have a sense of self-responsibility, too, for a millennial especially. Okay, I'm part of the future. It's up to me, in part, to motivate myself to get out there and spend some time, even if it's not the snappy, but if it's those white papers on campaign websites, which I wish every candidate did, quite frankly, because they're obligated to do that to give the voter of varying interests and intelligence as much information as possible. Better to bury than to deny. But doesn't it, again, fall upon, especially the millennial voter, they own the greatest piece of the future. It's their greatest responsibility for themselves and for the nation overall to be more proactive as well, not just to be motivated by a candidate to become proactive.
Well, that's true, but again, millennials right now, there is very high levels of distrust of the government. Millennials, we're sick of the government, but we don't trust either party, and candidates, it's their responsibility to show millennials that they're going to bring change, and if millennials don't feel like their vote is going to change anything or that either candidate won't really change anything, unfortunately, they're not going to show up. I mean, I agree with everything you said in theory, but I mean, the reality of this is that if you want to mobilize young people as a candidate, you need to prove to them that you are going to change the current situation or else they will not show up.
Well, that's certainly agreeable. I want to wrap up as we wrap up here with Kristen Tate from thelibertariancheck.com with your book that's coming out, Government Gone Wild, How D.C. Politicians Are Taking You for a Ride and What You Can Do About It. That falls into place with what you just said as far as people don't feel that disconnect, or maybe they just surrender saying, well, that's really going to be harmful and hurtful, but, well, what are you going to do about it? I'm just a vote of one.
Right. Well, my book gives readers some very concrete actions that they can take as individuals to start turning around this situation now. And one example I give in the book is that, we all know these presidential candidates. A lot of us are very well versed on large national issues like abortion or gay marriage, but many of us can't even name one of our local representatives. So in my book, I talk a lot about the importance of local governance, and it's very easy to get involved on a local level and make real change. Local government affects lots of things, like even the water we drink, the schools in our town, a ton of stuff. And you can just show up at your town meeting and sound off and make real change. It's amazing what can get done on the local level. So that's one little tidbit that I talk about in my book in terms of making real change. But there are things we can do to turn around our situation.
And especially with, unfortunately, how few people show up at local town council meetings, your voice can get very, very loud, very fast. And another surprise, too, people don't realize, for example, here in New Jersey, depending on the office you would like to run for, or see as something you'd want to run for, you can get onto a ballot with as little as 25 petition signatures.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do on the local level. I mean, even if you don't want to run for anything, again, just showing up at these meetings really can have an impact on what gets done.
So again, look for that book to be released on April 26th, Government Gone Wild, How D.C. Politicians Are Taking You for a Ride and What You Can Do About It. And as you await the release of that book, wander on over to Kristen's website, thelibertarianchick.com. Read her writings there as well. Kristen Tate, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.